们大家好，今天是7月15号星期三，欢迎收看美国观察。英国政府宣布将不再在其 5G 网络中使用华为的设备，而正在欧洲与盟友商议中国相关议题的白宫国安顾问奥布莱恩表示说，这表明欧洲的盟友已经意识到了华为所带来的国安威胁。此外，白宫官员还表示将与欧洲的盟友在七国集团峰会上商讨有关中国对新冠疫情的处理以及华为所带来的国安威胁。我们来看美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅的报道。
美国国安顾问奥布莱恩以及副国安顾问伯明在星期一启程前往欧洲，预计在当地停留3天，与欧洲的盟友呢，包括了英国、法国、德国以及意大利，商讨一些外交政策问题，当中也包括与中国相关议题，还有国家安全跟华为等等方面的问题。那么在星期二呢，英国政府就发布了华为禁令，说在英国的 5G 网络当中禁用华为设施。在星期二的上午就询问白宫的国安会，那这个华为的禁令呢，是否就是奥布莱恩欧洲此行的成果之一？那么对此呢，在一个小时之后，白宫国安会发出了声明，在声明当中是这样说的。白宫国安顾问奥布莱恩说，报道当中英国的做法反映了国际社会对华为以及其他不值得信赖的供应商对于国家安全构成的威胁，这些公司继续遭受中国共产党的掌控，我们期待与英国还有其他许多盟友合作，来刺激创新，促进 5G 网络供应链商家的多元化，以及确保 5G 网络安全免于危险的人为操纵。之后呢，美国的国会众议院外委会的首席共和党议员麦考尔也随后发出声明，对于英国决定禁止华为参与其 5G 网络建设表示赞赏。在这个声明当中呢，议员是这样说的，他说，中共决心通过其代理公司华为控制 5G 的未来构成重大的威胁，如果华为或其他与中共有联系的公司掌控控制没有任何其他的国家的数据呢，会是安全的。我很高兴的看到英国今天采取了必要的步骤，开始保护其自己不受到高风险供应商进一步将他们自己迁入电信基础设施当中的影响，如华为。我强烈的鼓励整个欧洲还有其他的国家以英国为榜样。那么此外呢，白宫的首席经济顾问库德洛在星期一的下午的时候，在白宫当中回记者提问，他也特别提到未来将会向七国集团的盟友们来提到中国方面所造成的威胁。我们看一下库德洛在白宫是怎么说的。
Basically the message is we will hold China accountable for a number of things and walking through that list obviously, we put enormous blame on China's behavior over the pandemic. The lack of transparency, it wouldn't work with us, it wouldn't work with the Europeans. They will be held accountable for that. There are national security issues here that are very delicate. They will be held accountable. The Hong Kong story is a very bad story, breaking the treaty.Sends a terrible signal worldwide. There's an investor protection lane on this where our SEC and Public Accounting Board have for many years, and including most recently, highly concerned about fraud, lack of accounting standards, and of course, funding companies in China thatare subsidized by the Communist Party is not in our national security. So those are a lot of the issues that Mr. O'Brien will be discussing. And I might add, there's a lot more agreement. I probably should throw Huawei into the mix as a national security issue. There's been a tremendous sea change in attitudes about China after this pandemic. I mean,their behavior during the Chinese flu was not good. And I hear it and talk to my counterparts in Europe, Britain, Japan. We will be talking about this at the G7 meeting at the end of next month.
那么除此之外呢，白宫也说这个特朗普总统也跟加拿大方面来商讨了关于华为还有这个中国方面造成的威胁。那么就在星期的上午呢，白宫的副新闻发言人迪尔发出了声明，声明当中说呢，特朗普总统与加拿大总理特鲁多通了电话，除了讨论两国关系，7月1号开始实施的美墨加贸易协议也讨论中国欺瞒性并且强制性的行为。根据白宫国安会发言人约翰乌尤特说呢，本次的欧洲之行，中国议题的部分主要将由副国安顾问伯明跟盟友们来讨论。那么除了中国与5G 的议题之外呢，其他的讨论议题还包括了俄罗斯、阿富汗、中东、北非的局势，另外呢还有新冠肺炎的防治做法，还有未来的重建工程。以上是美国之音白宫记者黄耀仪的报道。
英国政府星期二宣布将停止在其 5G 建设中使用华为的设备，并且会在7年内将华为的设备从其基础设施中完全剔除。华为对此表示失望，并且敦促伦敦重新考虑这一决定。我们来看美国之音驻伦敦特约记者江静玲的报道。
英国政府周二宣布将终止与华为参与未来 5G 建设的这样一个决定，而这项决定呢，显示着英国和中国华为过去20年的合作关系即将告一个段落。这项重大决定同时也显示着中英的所谓黄金时代就此必须走向了终端。那么我们可以看到，英国首相约翰逊周二主持国家安全会议讨论华为问题，英国数位文化媒体大臣陶敦随后在国会宣布，基于安全考量，从今年底，也就是12月31日开始，禁止再向华为购买 5G 设备，而营运商则在未来7年，也就是到2027年前，全部撤换已经安装的华为设备。英国原本已在今年1月同意让华为在英国未来的 5G 行动网络建设扮演有限的角色，也就是参与35%不具关键性设备的建设。但美国最新一波锁定华为供应链寄出的有关晶片科技的新制裁，影响到华为未来是否仍是可靠供应商的能力和质疑，迫使英国政府做出决策性的大转弯。除了国安考量外，中国新冠病毒、香港和新疆维吾尔族的处理方式也引发了英国的关注，破坏了英国朝野对中共政权的信任。英国切割与中国华为的关系估计将付出至少20亿英镑的代价，英国的 5G 发展也将推迟2到3年，英国的经济和科技都将造成重大冲击。而另一方面呢，英国和中国的双边关系也将受到巨大的影响。那么中国驻英国的大使刘晓明已经提出警告，要英国对这样的一个决定付出重大的代价以及承担后果。现在的问题是，这样的一个后果到底是什么，以及中国在什么时候会对英国做出这样的一个有承担性后果的回应和打击。英国约翰逊政府宣布与华为中断合作关系之际，我们看到美国特朗普政府的国家安全顾问奥布莱恩目前正在欧洲进行访问，这是否表示美欧已经准备联手合作对抗中国呢？美国国家安全顾问奥布莱恩目前正在欧洲进行为期3天的访问，与他同行的还有美国国家安全副顾问伯明，他们将与法国、德国和意大利等欧盟主要国家就国安、5G 网络以及供应链等领域进行会商和讨论。英国国防大臣和国家情报安全首长也已经从伦敦启程前往巴黎加入这次的会商。这是新冠病毒从中国武汉爆发以来，欧洲主要国家和美国国家高层安全顾问最密集的一次会谈，也是奥布莱恩和欧洲国家的国安领导们首次举行面对面会谈。这次会谈的内容主要是欧盟和欧洲国家外交政策和国家安全，其中与中国的关系是最受瞩目的焦点，还包括了香港问题、人权议题和 5G 以及其他高科技供应链领域的安全与竞争。 过去这段时间，美国全球围堵中国科技华为，一直向欧洲施压，要求欧洲国家在 5G 网络建设中拒绝使用华为。欧洲主要国家包括德国和法国在这件事情上则一直是以与华为合作最久的英国的决定作为指标。现在英国政府终于做出了不允许华为参与 5G 建设的决定，预料这将会影响欧洲其他国家的决策。我们可以看到新冠病毒港版国有安法给予欧洲国家重新审视和北京的机会。那么奥布莱恩和欧洲主要国家的这个国安的外交领袖会面显示了欧洲国家已经准备跟美国在后新冠病毒时期呢来展开新一波的合作，那么联手来制衡中国北京的共产政权。
美国国务卿蓬佩奥发表声明，明确宣布北京所谓的覆盖南中国海大部分海域的离岸资源权利主张是完全不合法的。与此同时，美国也不承认曾母暗杀是中国最南端领土的说法。我们来看美国之音常驻国务院记者张荣香的报道。
星期二，美国国务院高级官员在一场智库举办的网络研讨会当中表示，美国可能制裁中国官员以及中国国有企业在南中国海有争议地区的恐吓行为。当被问到制裁是否为可能选项的时候，美国国务院主管东亚太平洋事务的助理国务卿史达伟提出了回应。
Nothing's off the table. So yes, there is room for that. This is a language Chinese understands. It's demonstrative and tangible action.
2016年7月12号，海牙国际仲裁法庭裁决中国在南中国海所宣称的九段线不符合国际法。在这项裁决的4周年之际，美国国务卿蓬佩奥在一份声明中表示，美国的立场与法庭的决定一致。美国明确指出，中国所提出的涵盖南中国海大部分海域的离岸资源权利主张是完全不合法的，而北京为了控制这些资源而展开的霸凌活动也是完全非法。美国国务院详细列举2016年裁决的内容，例如中国不能合法声称属于菲律宾源自斯卡伯勒礁和斯普拉特利群岛的任何专属经济区的海洋权利主张，北京对这些地区的菲律宾渔业和海洋能源开发活动进行的骚扰是不合法的。史达伟说，美国明确支持海牙国际仲裁法庭的裁决，美国不再说对南中国海的海事争议采取中立立场。他补充说，美国在南中国海公海地区的自由航行活动近年来有所增加。分析家告诉美国之音，美国的声明等于是和国际社会以及东南亚国家的海事权利主张站在同一边。华盛顿智库战略与国际问题研究中心亚洲海事透明倡议主任格雷格·波林告诉美国之音，美国将支持2016年海牙国际仲裁法庭的裁决，但是美国国务卿蓬佩奥的声明是第一次明确赞同这个裁决的实质内容以及其合法性。他为美国与国际社会向中国提出更强而有力的批判铺平了道路。美国和平研究所资深分析师帕特里夏金也告诉美国之音，美国国务卿蓬佩奥的声明更进一步根据2016年的裁决具体列出了中国的非法行为。此外，尽管最新的美国声明传达了更强硬路线的讯号，但接下来美国在政策上有什么后续动作更为重要，因为仅凭信号没有办法改变中国的行为。以上是美国之音常驻国务院记者张荣香的采访报道。
美国首次明确提出拒绝接受中国在南中国海的大部分主权主张，美国国会参众两院外委会的成员对此表示欢迎。美国国会参众两院外委会两大政党的四位领导人星期一罕见地发表一份联合声明，对蓬佩奥宣布明确美国的南中国海政策表示欢迎，称完全支持这项决定。声明说，中国不仅没有遵守2016年的有关国际仲裁，反而用武力威迫邻国，并大举实施造岛和军事化的行动。 美国在中国对南中国海主权主张的问题上的模糊政策不再符合印太地区国家的共同利益。国会议员希望这项决定将带来美国及其伙伴国还有国际社会所有成员更好地支持依据国际法解决南中国海问题。中国驻美国大使馆发表声明，敦促美国切实恪守在南海领土主权问题上不持立场的承诺。
超过60万香港人上周末在香港立法会民主派初选中投票。美国国务卿蓬佩奥周二发表声明，祝贺香港泛民主派面对中国共产党扼杀香港自由的举措而成功举行初选。这位美国的首席外交官还对香港当局威胁此次初选可能违反港版国安法而表示严重关切。蓬佩奥在声明中说，超过60万香港人在首次全港范围的泛民初选中投下选票，他们的激情明确显示，面对中国共产党扼杀香港自由的举措，他们渴望发出自己的声音。蓬佩奥说，美国注意到香港特首林郑月娥威胁说，本次初选有可能违反北京新的港区国安法，再次显示中国共产党畏惧民主和本国人民的自由思想。美国将密切关注事态发展，特别是在9月6日立法会选举临近之际。蓬佩奥也在推特上发表推文，祝贺香港民主派初选取得的成功，表示9月份的立法会选举应同样的自由和公平。华盛顿香港民主委员会在推特上感谢蓬佩奥与香港人站在一起，并且表示，超过60万在初选中投票的人，表明香港人不曾也不会放弃自由民主的未来。
美国日前批准金额高达6.2亿美元的对台军售，中国表示坚决反对，并且将对军火承包商洛克希德马丁公司实施制裁。
美国国务院7月9日宣布批准对台军售爱国者三型导弹。中国外交部发言人赵立坚7月14日宣布，中方决定采取必要的措施，对此次军售的主要承包商洛克希德马丁公司实施制裁。美国之音询问了洛克希德马丁公司的反应，对方回复说，该公司在向国际客户进行军售方面与美国政府紧密合作，关于向外国政府销售的讨论应由美国政府来回应。分析人士说，中国很难对涉台军售的美国企业采取制裁措施，原因是这些企业在中国的业务量不多，或是所提供的产品和技术有强大的不可替代性。洛克希德马丁与中国的商务往来包括2019年9月曾向中国奥凯航空出售2台全任务飞行模拟器。
We could cut off the whole relationship.
我们的朋友遍天下。
The United States strongly opposes China's bullying.
他这么做的真实意图是什么？
众议院外委会共和党领袖麦考尔议员最近接受美国之音的专访，他表示，中共最害怕的并不是美国，而是本国的人民。此外，他还在采访中说，对中共最大的惩罚就是承认台湾的独立。我们来看美国之音记者李怡华的报道。
Let's turn to the current situation in Hong Kong. U.S. Congress has passed the Hong Kong Autonomy Act that was sanctioned the Chinese officials that threatens the autonomy status of Hong Kong in response to Beijing's new national security law in the city. What's the message do you think China is trying to send to the world by pushing through this new national security law?
They are pushing the taking over of Hong Kong. They very much want to be in control in the September elections to determine the fate of Hong Kongers, which will no longer bebe an autonomous, remember the one country, two systems. And this is in total violation of that treaty that was agreed to, that there would be one country, two systems. Now it's just going to be one country, one system. Mm-hmm. And it's all going to be under the Chinese Communist Party's regime. That will take away the freedom that Hong Kongers have enjoyed for so long. And almost a Gestapo-like police state in Hong Kong, arresting people for just simply speaking and being able to stand up and protest and have freedom of speech. So it's a very strong departure under the guise of a national security law to literally go back and into Hong Kong and take it over in violation of the treaty. And yet the world seems to just stand by and watch. We in the Congress passed this bill unanimously to send a strong message to the Chinese Communist Party that we are watching, we're paying attention, and we're serious. We didn't want to issue sanctions because in turn that could hurt the people, but they really left us no choice because the Secretary of State could not certify that Hong Kong was autonomous anymore, because they're not.
How will the U.S. work with the international community to stop China's aggressiveness, or is it just a mission impossible?
No, I think, you know, if there's a silver lining to COVID-19, it's a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. You know, again, as I talk to our European allies and NATO allies and partners across the world, and, then, you know, even, you know, like our leaders in Japan and South Korea and Taiwan, in India, I talked to the ambassador from India the other day. They want to pull their supply chains out of the Chinese Communist Party because they know at the end of the day, even you may have short-term gain, but it's long-term pain, and they're probably going to steal it from you. We have to be more competitive with China on, you know, technology-related issues and 5G versus Huawei. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to deal with their One Belt, One Road. We have to work with developing nations, not get stuck in these debt traps that China gets them into and then takes over their ports. It's not in their long-term best interest. So we set up a lot of policies now that will help, you know, American interest and businesses, which stands for freedom-loving people, to help compete in these developing nations and the African continent and Latin American.
Some people say that the new Hong Kong national security law could be a Beijing's blueprint to deal with Taiwan. We know that U.S. Congress has been very supportive to Taiwan, but are there more steps we should be taking when it comes to Taiwan and the cross-strait security?
Well, we did. I signed off on the foreign weapons sales approval that 16s and 18s to Taiwan to help them defend themselves against what we know is the long-term plan is clear. Mm-hmm. In the 100-year marathon, their long-term plan is to take back Taiwan in a similar way that they just took back Hong Kong. They would also like to very much be in the Tibetan space and also threaten the islands in the South Pacific Sea. And they're very, very candid about that and very open about their desires. I think we can make it clear that we stand by Taiwan. We will not allow this to happen, you know, in Taiwan. And I think the most punitive measure would be to recognize the legitimacy of Taiwan as an independent country. That would be a fundamental step in the right direction. If people are talking about how can we make China hold them accountable for what they did or responsible, that would certainly get their attention. That would be a very grave foreign policy decision to make.
Do you think it's the right time to revisit or review U.S. One China policy?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Taiwan was kicked out as observer status within the World Health Organization, I mean, the first thing Tedros did was kick Taiwan out. Mm-hmm. And I think it is time to maybe look at that policy. Mm-hmm. And the influence. You know, I think that Taiwan should be at least an observer in the WHO. They were the one country that was warning the entire world when they warned the WHO that this was human-to-human transmission, and yet Tedros and the WHO disregarded this. Mm-hmm. And they disregarded their own expert in Wuhan as well, which makes it even more egregious.
Let's just go back to talk about a broader picture between the U.S. and China. With all the confrontations with China in military, in technology, in diplomacy, in all kinds of fields, what's the end goal here for the United States?
I don't think we want to go to war with China. I don't think the American people want to go to war with China. But we have to compete with China, and we have to stand up for human rights violations that China perpetuates. And we need to stand up for freedom-loving democracies. That should be our foreign policy. And our long-term goal is to prevent the 100-year marathon of world domination. I don't think you talk to any neighbors next to the Chinese Communist Party's government, none of them want to live under this oppressive dictatorship. And in fact, I would urge the people of China themselves, who can see this today, that it's not in your best interest either. Mm-hmm. And the oppressive nature of the Chinese Communist Party is just that. And it's hurting the people of China, the good people of China, who have such a rich and historical culture, is really being destroyed by this communist dictatorship. So I think at the end of the day, communism fails, as it had with the Soviet Union and other countries. It's just a matter of time. And the more we can accelerate the demise of the party and restore the democracy of the people of China, then we will have won.
If you could give Chinese leadership some advice about how to stabilize the relationship with the U.S., what would be your advice?
You know, be more transparent. When you have a SARS-like virus that's required under international health rules to be reported, why didn't they report it? They waited almost 2 months, and then they never reported it. It was the World Health Organization finding out in various publications. That put the entire world in jeopardy. In my home state of Texas right now, our hospitals are almost at maximum capacity. The loss of life and destruction, economic destruction, globally cannot be underestimated, nor will it be forgotten. And it's a wake-up call that you want to be friends with the United States, then start behaving like a good neighbor and not misbehaving, you know, is a malign influence in the region.
So China has intensified its propaganda war against the U.S., discrediting the U.S. and then trying to create a narrative that U.S. is trying to stop China's rise. What would you be your message to our audience about the current state of U.S.-China relations?
It's been severely damaged when the foreign minister declares in the propaganda pieces on our social media platforms in the United States that somehow the United States military created COVID-19, that somehow we are responsible, when they know that's an outright lie. That does a lot of damage diplomatically to the American people in the United States of America, to create such a fabrication. And to the people of China, I would say that they lie to you too, that their propaganda is real, and that's how they control you. And I think what the Chinese Communist Party is most fearful of is not the United States, but its own people, the people of China. And how long can they hold a lock on them and oppress their freedoms? How long can that last? And that's up to the people of China. But we stand with you for democracy and freedom against your oppressive communist dictatorship. And I hope the people in China hear this message, not to believe the lies that it is simply propaganda. They censor their people. They have you under surveillance every day, and they take your human rights and civil rights away.
And that concludes our interview with Congressman McCaul. Thank you very much, Congressman McCaul, for speaking with Voice of America and sharing your insights on China. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you, EY. I appreciate you covering the story.
美国的17个州以及华盛顿特区7月13日就国际学生的新规定起诉联邦政府，要求法院阻止这项新规定的实施。来自马萨诸塞、伊利诺伊、马里兰、密西根、威斯康星还有宾夕法尼亚等17个州，还有华盛顿哥伦比亚特区的司法部长星期一向波士顿一个联邦地区法院起诉美国国土安全部和美国移民及海关执法局。美国移民及海关执法局上周出台的规定要求，只上网课的国际学生不能入境美国，或者是继续留在美国。这场诉讼是针对国际学生新规的最新司法挑战。上个星期，哈佛大学还有麻省理工就这项新规向波士顿联邦法院提出了类似的诉讼。目前已经有200多所美国高校支持这场诉讼。起诉书说，新政策让学校陷入了两难的境地。原告地区的1000多所高校2019年招收了37万多名国际学生，他们对经济的贡献超过140亿美元。好的，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。 友们，大家好，今天是7月15号，星期三，欢迎收看《美国观察》。英国政府宣布将不再在其 5G 网络中使用华为的设备，而正在欧洲与盟友商议中国相关议题的白宫国安顾问奥布莱恩表示说，这表明欧洲的盟友已经意识到了华为所带来的国安威胁。此外，白宫官员还表示，将与欧洲的盟友在七国集团峰会上商讨有关中国对新冠疫情的处理以及华为所带来的国安威胁。我们来看美国之音白宫记者黄耀毅的报道。
美国国安顾问奥布莱恩以及副国安顾问伯明在星期一启程前往欧洲，预计在当地停留3天，与欧洲的盟友呢，包括了英国、法国、德国以及意大利，商讨一些外交政策问题，当中也包括与中国相关议题，还有国家安全跟华为等等方面的问题。那么在星期二呢，英国政府就发布了华为禁令，说在英国的 5G 网络当中禁用华为设施。在星期二的上午就询问白宫的国安会，那这个华为的禁令呢，是否就是奥布莱恩欧洲此行的成果之一？那么对此呢，在一个小时之后，白宫国安会发出了声明，在声明当中是这样说的。白宫国安顾问奥布莱恩说，报道当中英国的做法反映了国际社会对华为以及其他不值得信赖的供应商对于国家安全构成的威胁，这些公司继续遭受中国共产党的掌控，我们期待与英国还有其他许多盟友合作，来刺激创新，促进 5G 网络供应链商家的多元化，以及确保 5G 网络安全免于危险的人为操纵。之后呢，美国的国会众议院外委会的首席共和党议员麦考尔也随后发出声明，对于英国决定禁止华为参与其 5G 网络建设表示赞赏。在这个声明当中呢，议员是这样说的，他说，中共决心通过其代理公司华为控制 5G 的未来构成重大的威胁，如果华为或其他与中共有联系的公司掌控控制没有任何其他国家的数据呢，会是安全的。我很高兴的看到英国今天采取了必要的步骤，开始保护其自己不受到高风险供应商进一步将他们自己迁入电信基础设施当中的影响，如华为。我强烈的鼓励整个欧洲还有其他的国家以英国为榜样。那么此外呢，白宫的首席经济顾问库德洛在星期一的下午的时候，在白宫当中回记者提问，他也特别提到未来将会向七国集团的盟友们来提到中国方面所造成的威胁。我们看一下库德洛在白宫是怎么说的。
Basically the message is we will hold China accountable for a number of things and walking through that list obviously, we put enormous blame on China's behavior over the pandemic. The lack of transparency, it wouldn't work with us, it wouldn't work with the Europeans. They will be held accountable for that. There are national security issues here that are very delicate. They will be held accountable. The Hong Kong story is a very bad story, breaking the treaty.Sends a terrible signal worldwide. There's an investor protection lane on this where our SEC and Public Accounting Board have for many years, and including most recently, highly concerned about fraud, lack of accounting standards, and of course, funding companies in China thatare subsidized by the Communist Party is not in our national security. So those are a lot of the issues that Mr. O'Brien will be discussing. And I might add, there's a lot more agreement. I probably should throw Huawei into the mix as a national security issue. There's been a tremendous sea change in attitudes about China after this pandemic. I mean,their behavior during the Chinese flu was not good. And I hear it and talk to my counterparts in Europe, Britain, Japan. We will be talking about this at the G7 meeting at the end of next month.
那么除此之外呢，白宫也说，这个特朗普总统也跟加拿大方面来商讨了关于华为还有这个中国方面造成的威胁。那么就在星期的上午呢，白宫的副新闻发言人迪尔 发出了声明，声明当中说呢，特朗普总统与加拿大总理特鲁多通了电话，除了讨论两国关系，7月1号开始实施的美墨加贸易协议，也讨论中国欺瞒性并且强制性的行为。而根据白宫国安会发言人约翰乌尤特说呢，本次的欧洲之行，中国议题的部分主要将由副国安顾问伯明跟盟友们来讨论。那么除了中国与5G 的议题之外呢，其他的讨论议题还包括了俄罗斯、阿富汗、中东、北非的局势，另外呢还有新冠肺炎的防治做法，还有未来的重建工程。以上是美国之音白宫记者黄耀仪的报道。
英国政府星期二宣布将停止在其 5G 建设中使用华为的设备，并且会在7年内将华为的设备从其基础设施中完全剔除。华为对此表示失望，并且敦促伦敦重新考虑这一决定。我们来看美国之音驻伦敦特约记者江静玲的报道。
英国政府周二宣布将终止与华为参与未来 5G 建设的这样一个决定，而这项决定呢，显示着英国和中国华为过去20年的合作关系即将告一个段落。这项重大决定同时也显示着中英的所谓黄金时代就此必须走向了终端。那么我们可以看到，英国首相约翰逊周二主持国家安全会议讨论华为问题，英国数位文化媒体大臣陶敦随后在国会宣布，基于安全考量，从今年底，也就是12月31日开始，禁止再向华为购买 5G 设备，而营运商则在未来7年，也就是到2027年前，全部撤换已经安装的华为设备。英国原本已在今年1月同意让华为在英国未来的 5G 行动网络建设扮演有限的角色，也就是参与35%不具关键性设备的建设。但美国最新一波锁定华为供应链寄出的有关晶片科技的新制裁，影响到华为未来是否仍是可靠供应商的能力和质疑，迫使英国政府做出决策性的大转弯。除了国安考量外，中国新冠病毒、香港和新疆维吾尔族的处理方式也引发了英国的关注，破坏了英国朝野对中共政权的信任。英国切割与中国华为的关系估计将付出至少20亿英镑的代价，英国的 5G 发展也将推迟2到3年，英国的经济和科技都将造成重大冲击。而另一方面呢，英国和中国的双边关系也将受到巨大的影响。那么中国驻英国的大使刘晓明已经提出警告，要英国对这样的一个决定付出重大的代价以及承担后果。现在的问题是，这样的一个后果到底是什么，以及中国在什么时候会对英国做出这样的一个有承担性后果的回应和打击。英国约翰逊政府宣布与华为中断合作关系之际，我们看到美国特朗普政府的国家安全顾问奥布莱恩目前正在欧洲进行访问，这是否表示美欧已经准备联手合作对抗中国呢？美国国家安全顾问奥布莱恩目前正在欧洲进行为期3天的访问，与他同行的还有美国国家安全副顾问伯明，他们将与法国、德国和意大利等欧盟主要国家就国安、5G 网络以及供应链等领域进行会商和讨论。英国国防大臣和国家情报安全首长也已经从伦敦启程前往巴黎加入这次的会商。这是新冠病毒从中国武汉爆发以来，欧洲主要国家和美国国家高层安全顾问最密集的一次会谈，也是奥布莱恩和欧洲国家的国安领导们首次举行面对面会谈。这次会谈的内容主要是欧盟和欧洲国家外交政策和国家安全，其中与中国的关系是最受瞩目的焦点，还包括了香港问题、人权议题和 5G 以及其他高科技供应链领域的安全与竞争。过去这段时间，美国全球围堵中国科技华为，一直向欧洲施压，要求欧洲国家在 5G 网络建设中拒绝使用华为。 欧洲主要国家包括德国和法国在这件事情上则一直是以与华为合作最久的英国的决定作为指标。现在英国政府终于做出了不允许华为参与 5G 建设的决定，预料这将会影响欧洲其他国家的决策。我们可以看到新冠病毒港版国有安法给予欧洲国家重新审视和北京的机会。那么奥布莱恩和欧洲主要国家的这个国安的外交领袖会面显示了欧洲国家已经准备跟美国在后新冠病毒时期呢来展开新一波的合作，那么联手来制衡中国北京的共产政权。
美国国务卿蓬佩奥发表声明，明确宣布北京所谓的覆盖南中国海大部分海域的离岸资源权利主张是完全不合法的。与此同时，美国也不承认曾母暗沙是中国最南端领土的说法。我们来看美国之音常驻国务院记者张荣香的报道。
星期二，美国国务院高级官员在一场智库举办的网络研讨会当中表示，美国可能制裁中国官员以及中国国有企业在南中国海有争议地区的恐吓行为。当被问到制裁是否为可能选项的时候，美国国务院主管东亚太平洋事务的助理国务卿史达伟提出了回应。
Nothing's off the table. So yes, there is room for that. This is a language Chinese understands. It's demonstrative and tangible action.
2016年7月12号，海牙国际仲裁法庭裁决中国在南中国海所宣称的九段线不符合国际法。在这项裁决的四周年之际，美国国务卿蓬佩奥在一份声明中表示，美国的立场与法庭的决定一致。美国明确指出，中国所提出的涵盖南中国海大部分海域的离岸资源权利主张是完全不合法的，而北京为了控制这些资源而展开的霸凌活动也是完全非法。美国国务院详细列举2016年裁决的内容，例如中国不能合法声称属于菲律宾、源自斯卡伯勒礁和斯普拉特利群岛的任何专属经济区的海洋权利主张，北京对这些地区的菲律宾渔业和海洋能源开发活动进行的骚扰是不合法的。史达伟说，美国明确支持海牙国际仲裁法庭的裁决，美国不再说对南中国海的海事争议采取中立立场。他补充说，美国在南中国海公海地区的自由航行活动近年来有所增加。菲西加告诉美国之音，美国的声明等于是和国际社会以及东南亚国家的海事权利主张站在同一边。华盛顿智库战略与国际问题研究中心亚洲海事透明倡议主任格雷格·波林告诉美国之音，美国将支持2016年海牙国际仲裁法庭的裁决，但是美国国务卿蓬佩奥的声明是第一次明确赞同这个裁决的实质内容以及其合法性。他为美国与国际社会向中国提出更强而有力的批判铺平了道路。美国和平研究所资深分析师帕特里夏金也告诉美国之音，美国国务卿蓬佩奥的声明更进一步根据2016年的裁决具体列出了中国的非法行为。此外，尽管最新的美国声明传达了更强硬路线的讯号，但接下来美国在政策上有什么后续动作更为重要，因为仅凭信号没有办法改变中国的行为。以上是美国之音常驻国务院记者张荣香的采访报道。
美国首次明确提出拒绝接受中国在南中国海的大部分主权主张，美国国会参众两院外委会的成员对此表示欢迎。美国国会参众两院外委会两大政党的四位领导人星期一罕见地发表一份联合声明，对蓬佩奥宣布明确美国的南中国海政策表示欢迎，称完全支持这项决定。声明说，中国不仅没有遵守2016年的有关国际仲裁，反而用武力威迫邻国，并大举实施造岛和军事化的行动。美国在中国对南中国海主权主张的问题上的模糊政策不再符合印太地区国家的共同利益。 国会议员希望这项决定将带来美国及其伙伴国还有国际社会所有成员更好的支持依据国际法解决南中国海问题。中国驻美国大使馆发表声明，敦促美国切实恪守在南海领土主权问题上不持立场的承诺。
超过60万香港人上周末在香港立法会民主派初选中投票。美国国务卿蓬佩奥周二发表声明，祝贺香港泛民主派面对中国共产党扼杀香港自由的举措而成功举行初选。这位美国的首席外交官还对香港当局威胁此次初选可能违反港版国安法而表示严重关切。蓬佩奥在声明中说，超过60万香港人在首次全港范围的泛民初选中投下选票，他们的激情明确显示面对中国共产党扼杀香港自由的举措，他们渴望发出自己的声音。蓬佩奥说，美国注意到香港特首林郑月娥威胁说本次初选有可能违反北京新的港区国安法，再次显示中国共产党畏惧民主和本国人民的自由思想。美国将密切关注事态发展，特别是在9月6日立法会选举临近之际。蓬佩奥也在推特上发表推文祝贺香港民主派初选取得的成功，表示9月份的立法会选举应同样的自由和公平。华盛顿香港民主委员会在推特上感谢蓬佩奥与香港人站在一起，并且表示超过60万在初选中投票的人表明香港人不曾也不会放弃自由民主的未来。
美国日前批准金额高达6.2亿美元的对台军售，中国表示坚决反对，并且将对军火承包商洛克希德马丁公司实施制裁。
美国国务院7月9日宣布批准对台军售爱国者三型导弹。中国外交部发言人赵立坚7月14日宣布，中方决定采取必要的措施，对此次军售的主要承包商洛克希德马丁公司实施制裁。美国之音询问了洛克希德马丁公司的反应，对方回复说，该公司在向国际客户进行军售方面与美国政府紧密合作，关于向外国政府销售的讨论应由美国政府来回应。分析人士说，中国很难对涉台军售的美国企业采取制裁措施，原因是这些企业在中国的业务量不多，或是所提供的产品和技术有强大的不可替代性。洛克希德马丁与中国的商务往来包括2019年9月曾向中国奥凯航空出售2台全任务飞行模拟器。
我们的朋友遍天下。
The United States strongly opposes China's bullying.
他这么做的真实意图是什么？
美国国会众议院外委会共和党领袖麦考尔议员最近接受美国之音的专访，他表示中共最害怕的并不是美国，而是本国的人民。此外，他还在采访中说，对中共最大的惩罚就是承认台湾的独立。我们来看美国之音记者李怡华的报道。
Let's turn to the current situation in Hong Kong. U.S. Congress has passed the Hong Kong Autonomy Act that would sanction the Chinese officials that threatens the autonomy status of Hong Kong in response to Beijing's new national security law in the city. What's the message do you think China is trying to send to the world by pushing through this new national security law?
They are pushing the taking over of Hong Kong. They very much want to be in control in the September elections to determine the fate of Hong Kongers, which will no longer be an autonomous. Remember, the one country, two systems. And this is in total violation of that treaty that was agreed to, that there would be one country, two systems. Now it's just going to be one country, one system. Mm-hmm. And it's all going to be under the Chinese Communist Party's regime. That will take away the freedom that Hong Kongers have enjoyed for so long. And almost a Gestapo-like police state in Hong Kong, arresting people for just simply speaking and being able to stand up and protest and have freedom of speech. So it's a very strong departure under the guise of a national security law to literally go back into Hong Kong and take it over in violation of the treaty And yet the world seems to just stand by and watch. We in the Congress passed this bill unanimously to send a strong message to the Chinese Communist Party that we are watching, we're paying attention, and we're serious. We didn't want to issue sanctions because in turn that could hurt the people, but they really left us no choice because the Secretary of State could not certify that Hong Kong was autonomous anymore, because they're not.
How will the U.S. work with the international community to stop China's aggressiveness, or is it just a mission impossible?
No, I think, you know, if there's a silver lining to COVID-19, it's a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. You know, again, as I talk to our European allies and NATO allies and partners across the world, and, then, you know, even, you know, like our leaders in Japan and South Korea and Taiwan, in India, I talked to the ambassador from India the other day. They want to pull their supply chains out of the Chinese Communist Party because they know at the end of the day, even you may have a short-term gain, but it's long-term pain, and they're probably going to steal it from you. We have to be more competitive with China on, you know, technology-related issues and 5G versus Huawei. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to deal with their One Belt, One Road. We have to work with developing nations and not get stuck in these debt traps that China gets them into and then takes over their ports. It's not in their long-term best interest. So we set up a lot of policies now that will help, you know, American interest and businesses, which stands for freedom-loving people, to help compete in these developing nations and the African continent and Latin American.
Some people say that the new Hong Kong national security law could be a Beijing's blueprint to deal with Taiwan. We know that U.S. Congress has been very supportive to Taiwan, but are there more steps we should be taking when it comes to Taiwan and the cross-strait security?
Well, we did. I signed off on the foreign weapons sales approval of F-16s and 18s to Taiwan to help them defend themselves against what we know is the long-term plan is clear. Mm-hmm. In the 100-year marathon, their long-term plan is to take back Taiwan in a similar way that they just took back Hong Kong. They would also like to very much be in the Tibetan space and also threaten the islands in the South Pacific Sea. And they're very, very candid about that and very open about their desires. I think we can make it clear that we stand by Taiwan. We will not allow this to happen, you know, in Taiwan. And I think the most punitive measure would be to recognize the legitimacy of Taiwan as an independent country. That would be a fundamental step in the right direction. If people are talking about how can we make China hold them accountable for what they did and responsible, that would certainly get their attention. But that would be a very grave foreign policy decision to make.
Do you think it's the right time to revisit or review U.S. One China policy?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that the Taiwan was kicked out as observer status within the World Health Organization, I mean, the first thing Tedros did was kick Taiwan out. Mm-hmm. And I think it is time to maybe look at that policy. Mm-hmm. And the influence. You know, I think that Taiwan should be at least an observer in the WHO. They were the one country that was warning the entire world when they warned the WHO that this was human-to-human transmission, and yet Tedros and the WHO disregarded this. Mm-hmm. And they disregarded their own expert in Wuhan as well, which makes it even more egregious.
Let's just go back to talk about a broader picture between the U.S. and China. With all the confrontations with China in military, in technology, in diplomacy, in all kinds of fields, what's the end goal here for the United States?
I don't think we want to go to war with China. I don't think the American people want to go to war with China. But we have to compete with China, and we have to stand up for human rights violations that China perpetuates. And we need to stand up for freedom-loving democracies. That should be our foreign policy. And our long-term goal is to prevent the 100-year marathon of world domination. I don't think you talk to any neighbors next to the Chinese Communist Party's government, none of them want to live under this oppressive dictatorship. And in fact, I would urge the people of China themselves, you can see this today, that it's not in your best interest either. Mm-hmm. And the oppressive nature of the Chinese Communist Party is just that. And it's hurting the people of China, the good people of China, who have such a rich and historical culture, is really being destroyed by this communist dictatorship. So I think at the end of the day, communism fails, as it had with the Soviet Union and other countries. It's just a matter of time. And the more we can accelerate the demise of the party and restore the democracy of the people of China, then we will have won.
If you could give Chinese leadership some advice about how to stabilize the relationship with the U.S., what would be your advice?
You know, be more transparent. When you have a SARS-like virus that's required under international health rules to be reported, why didn't they report it? They waited almost 2 months, and then they never reported it. It was the World Health Organization finding out in various publications. That put the entire world in jeopardy. In my home state of Texas right now, our hospitals are almost at maximum capacity. The loss of life and destruction, economic destruction, globally cannot be underestimated, nor will it be forgotten. And it's a wake-up call that you want to be friends with the United States, then start behaving like a good neighbor and not misbehaving, you know, is a malign influence in the region.
So China has intensified its propaganda war against the U.S., discrediting the U.S. and then trying to create a narrative that U.S. is trying to stop China's rise. What would you be your message to our audience about the current state of U.S.-China relations?
It's been severely damaged when the foreign minister declares in the propaganda pieces on our social media platforms in the United States that somehow the United States military created COVID-19, that somehow we are responsible, when they know that's an outright lie. That does a lot of damage diplomatically to the American people in the United States of America, to create such a fabrication. And to the people of China, I would say that they lie to you too, that their propaganda is real, and that's how they control you. And I think what the Chinese Communist Party is most fearful of is not the United States, but its own people, the people of China. And how long can they hold a lock on them and oppress their freedoms? How long can that last? And that's up to the people of China. But we stand with you for democracy and freedom against your oppressive communist dictatorship. And I hope the people in China hear this message, not to believe the lies that it is simply propaganda. They censor their people. They have you under surveillance every day, and they take your human rights and civil rights away.
And that concludes our interview with Congressman McCaul. Thank you very much, Congressman McCaul, for speaking with Voice of America and sharing your insights on China. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you, Yiwan. I appreciate you covering the story.
美国的十七个州以及华盛顿特区7月13日就国际学生的新规定起诉联邦政府，要求法院阻止这项新规定的实施。来自马萨诸塞、伊利诺伊、马里兰、密西根、威斯康星还有宾夕法尼亚等十七个州，还有华盛顿哥伦比亚特区的司法部长星期一向波士顿一个联邦地区法院起诉美国国土安全部和美国移民及海关执法局。美国移民及海关执法局上周出台的规定要求，只上网课的国际学生不能入境美国，或者是继续留在美国。这场诉讼是针对国际学生新规的最新司法挑战。上个星期，哈佛大学还有麻省理工就这项新规向波士顿联邦法院提出了类似的诉讼。目前已经有200多所美国高校支持这场诉讼。起诉书说，新政策让学校陷入了两难的境地。原告地区的1000多所高校2019年招收了37万多名国际学生，他们对经济的贡献超过140亿美元。好的，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。